Just Love on the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world through the perspective of our Catholic social values. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, the host of Just Love, and Tom Dobbins is with me, who rounds up our guests who can talk about the interesting topics that we talk about. We say just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So Tom, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, one of my favorite holidays. How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was wonderful, Monsieur. We got the turkey catered in. Dad just felt it would be easier to wind up having the turkey catered in, but it was very nice. It was my mom, my dad, my brother was there, and who you've met, Monsignor, and who's been on our show, my friend Ashok. Also, he decided he didn't go to his family's in Jersey. He decided to come to our family. So we had visitors. It was nice. We had a very nice Thanksgiving. So I have nothing to complain about. And by the way, Monsignor, your stuffing was delicious.
Thank you.
And Dad said to tell you.
Okay, that is great. I also like to. Thanksgiving is not one of those days where I like going to a restaurant. Now, I say that having almost never gone to a restaurant for Thanksgiving, maybe once, but it's just much nicer. I see that as a time when one is at home. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is then there are some leftovers.
Yes.
So you can have them, and that's good. So Tom, do you think you maybe started a new tradition rather than going out as you have in the past to the Italian restaurant?
Yeah, I think so, Monsignor. I just think, given the givens, none of us are getting younger. I'll put it to you that way. So I have a feeling that, this is just running much easier for us to be able to kind of, do it at our own pace. I mean, it was great. The restaurant, the restaurant still delivered the food. So we did get it catered. So the restaurant did deliver the food. But it was there early. So we were able to reheat it. We were able to use the good china. Which Whoa. Is nice because we don't ever use it. We don't ever use it anymore. We eat off of paper plates.
Okay.
So it's good. You can at least bring it out once a year because we have Christmas. We have Christmas plates for Christmas. So the good china is only for Thanksgiving. So it's good. We give it use once a year at least.
Well, maybe since you used it, maybe you could use it for Easter.
Yes, that's a good idea, Monsignor. You're right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. We could use it for our Easter celebration, too. I mean, we can make it a little bit special that way.
Okay, well, that is good. That is good. So, Tom, why don't we go to our first guest? Our first guest is Dr. Christina Durante, who is the director of the Good Shepherd International Foundation. And we'll talk a little bit about what the Good Shepherd International Foundation does and her work. Christina Durante, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, hi, very nice to be here. Thank you very Good. Much for the invitation.
Well, thank you for joining us. So Dr. Durante, give our listeners a little bit of your background and so that they get a sense of you and what you are and how you wound up in your current position.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I'm Italian and I currently live in Rome, in Italy. Now I'm in New York visiting our Good Shepherd sisters here, but I'm born and raised in Italy. And Before joining Good Shepherd Sisters, I've been working in nonprofit for, I would say, since graduating. My degree is in communication, and then I got my PhD in economics. And then I started working nonprofit, different sectors, culture, social services. And in 2007, the Sisters of the Good Shepherd, their leadership in Rome at their curia, they were looking for a development director, and they published an ad. I was curious. We had a very lively interview, I remember, almost 20 years ago, and they decided to hire me. So I started this development office for their international solidarity work, especially in developing countries. And that's how we started. In 2008, we established a foundation, an international foundation. I became the director. And little by little, we built this international organization that now supports Good Shepherd ministries, especially in the Global South and Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that. Now, maybe for some of our listeners, you might be able to share with them a little bit about what the community, the Good Shepherd Sisters. I know it is an international community. Can you tell me a little bit about the Good Shepherd Sisters, their foundation, and how they came to be and their ministries?
Sure. So the congregation was founded in the 1800 in France, in Angers, by Saint Mary Euphrasia Pelletier. And the focus has been ever since on caring for girls, women, and children, especially those in vulnerable conditions. So they started mostly with shelters, offering, care for girls and women, but then spreading across the world. So today there are sisters in 67 countries, from Philippines to Argentina, from Canada to South Africa. So depending on the ne specific needs in the different countries, the ministries take different shapes. So we have houses, safe houses for women victims of violence, girls victims of trafficking, or programs to support community development to address poverty. And we range service from areas that are affected by exploitation in mining, so great environmental risks, to the forest areas of the Amazon in Brazil, or the mountains in Peru. We have ministries on the island of Madagascar, in Indonesia with rural people. So it's very diverse, I would say, these days. But the key focus remains on focusing on the dignity and compassion for women and girls, particularly who live in particularly vulnerable conditions.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. These days, how big is the Good Shepherd community? How many religious are there worldwide now?
So approximately there's 2,500 sisters around the world, but I would say the Good Shepherd mission today is carried forward, of course, by the sisters who keep the torch lit and upfront. But there's many what we call partners in mission, so many lay people that share the same values and the same vision of the sisters, and collaborate with them in different forms to continue the legacy. In some countries, there's lay partners in leadership roles. In others, it's more supportive roles, volunteer staff. I would say it's a very broad community today, a global Good Shepherd family.
So right now in the United States, we are, the time of Thanksgiving. It is generally a time of giving and generosity. It brings out a lot of very, very good things. So how is your work going with the foundation in terms of raising funds to support these ministries?
Thank you very much for this question. So, the foundation has this as one of its key goals because, as you know, especially ministries in the global south really need support from international community. In many of the places where we work, the programs for education or protection of girls and children and women are not supported by either the local governments or local communities. So we are addressing some of these issues with specific campaigns. And I'm here in New York because last week on Tuesday, we actually presented a new campaign we've launched to eradicate child labor. So this campaign is called Children, Not Workers, and it actually focuses on raising awareness and funds to support three projects that we have in three countries in Nepal, in the Republic of Congo, DRC, and in Ecuador. And the focus is to support around 10,000 children who are currently engaged in work in the mines of cobalt in DRC, in the tourist sector in Nepal, and this is especially girls who are a victim of sexual exploitation, and children involved in working in markets in the streets of Quito in Ecuador. So this is where we've been focusing our attention for fundraising, and we're looking, of course, for generous people who are willing to engage not just by giving funding, but also to raise awareness on this really serious crisis that is still among us. It sounds like something from the 1800, Dickensian Victorian England, but actually, child labor is still with us. There's over 130 million children engaged in child labor. In things like digging cobalt in the mines. So I think we're all as you said, this is a time for being together with families, with children. So it's a good time to reflect on children who are deprived of the right to just be children and have the right of education and growing safe.
We're speaking with Dr. Christina Durante, the director of the Good Shepherd International Foundation. Dr. Durante, if somebody wanted to make a donation, how would they do it?
So you can visit our website, www.gsif.it, and you can find all the instructions to give. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to say that. The American people have been very generous with our programs in the past, especially with our project in DR Congo. And so we hope to continue to raise awareness and attention in support of this very important work. In the past 5 years, our Good Shepherd program has enabled over 5,000 children to quit dangerous work in the mines of cobalt that fuels our electric vehicles, our cell phones. And now these children had the opportunity to study, to get a degree, and find alternatives to such dangerous work. So we hope to continue with that. The needs are still there, and we know American people are very open to hear these stories.
So your current campaign, how big a campaign it is? How much money do you hope to raise in this campaign to reduce child labor?
So we are looking at over the next 3 years, $13 million. So it's an ambitious goal, and we count, of course, on every sponsor, every person of goodwill to help. So over the next 3 years, this is the figure we're looking at.
Now, I know you mentioned that 5,000 children were rescued from child labor. Can you share with our listeners a few particular stories of the impact that the positive impact that has been made?
Sure. So I had a chance to meet some of these children. And I remember particularly in 2017, before COVID, I was visiting with the sisters one of these mining villages. These are areas that resemble like what we think the moon looks like. So desert, red, dusty, big giant holes in the on the ground, no trees, no houses, just plastic huts where people spend the night. And a stream of dirty water flowing through. This is where communities of people, groups of people congregate to dig and wash the minerals. A lot of children in this area working down or working actually in this toxic water pools. I met one of these kids, Ziki was his name. He told me about his story, about his life, every day more or less looking like the other. He was an orphan. His mother died of childbirth, unfortunately not a rare occurrence in those villages due to the lack of healthcare services. And his father unfortunately died a few years later of a landslide in the mines. That's another unfortunately very frequent occurrence. You might have heard just a week ago, 80 miners died in one of this big giant, what they call artisanal mines in Congo. So this is a very common story that you hear from the children that are in our school in Kolwezi. So Ziki was in a way lucky because he got the attention of international media. He'd been interviewed by CBS at the time. They were doing a reportage and they put him in touch with our program to see if we could help him. We spoke with his grandmother and she explained to us the situation. She was taking care of three grandchildren. So we offer her a job in one of the farming cooperatives that we were helping to start with local women so that she could compensate for the loss of the income that sending the kid to school would cause. And so he started going to school with his siblings, and the grandmother began her job with a farming cooperative. So I spoke with my colleagues and the sisters in Kolwezi just a couple of weeks ago, and they told me what happened with Ziki, with this guy and his grandmother. So he finished primary school with us, with Bon Pastor. Then his family had to move, so he couldn't continue the studies. They had ups and downs, but now they're back in Kolwezi, and he wanted to go back to get secondary school education. He's 18 now. He wants to be a mechanic and he's very determined to pursue his dream. So we have accompanied this this boy, like the many others, through the ups and downs of a life in an area where it's really not easy to find alternative livelihoods to mining. And this is our daily challenge, let's say, together with the sisters, finding ways to uphold the dignity of people in their communities, at the same time helping them find ways to raise an income and support their families that are not harming for their health and for their soul and their spirit. So this is just one of the stories that I can share with you from,
Great.
especially from the DRC.
Well, thank you so much for that. We are speaking with Dr. Christina Durante, who is the director of the Good Shepherd International Foundation. Now, you mentioned this current campaign to reduce child labor. What are some of the other areas that the foundation is focusing on at the current time?
So we have programs that focus, for example, on safe migrations in Central America. Our sisters are present, I would say, in the whole of the Latin American region, from Mexico, from the border, Tijuana, Ciudad Juarez, all the way down to the South American countries, Bolivia, Venezuela, Colombia, Argentina, and they've been very much affected by the movement of people, the migration of people, especially of women and children. So since the past 5 years, they've developed programs along the what they call La Ruta, along the road that goes from Colombia, Bolivia, all the way up to Mexico, to assist women and their children who are either forced or decide to migrate. There's a lot of work that we do in the countries themselves to prevent migration, or at least to support informed decision for migration, providing women with a good assessment of their skills, capacities, and motivation to see if there are ways for them to stay in their countries. But when they are really forced and they see no alternative, supporting them across the border with assistance, legal assistance, psychological assistance, and the possibility to keep in touch with their families, with their children. This is particularly now strong in Central America, where we have safe houses where we can provide legal counseling, as well as at times just a safe shelter for these families. In Mexico, in particular, this kind of programs take the shape also of safe houses for women who are either affected by trafficking. Many of these women, unfortunately, become prey of traffickers or sexual exploitation, as well as violence in different forms. We're currently working in Mexico with four other women religious congregations, coordinating a nationwide project that is specifically focusing on protection of women from gender-based violence. And it's a very nice project that we are implementing in collaboration with CRS, Catholic Relief Service. And we are experimenting a methodology they have developed. It's called the Grupo Apoyo Mujer, which means we help women becoming themselves trainers for other women to find their voice and build their self-confidence and really try to break the cycle of violence through peer support. So this is just to give you a bit of a glimpse of another type of activity we do.
Speaking with Dr. Christina Durante, the director of the Good Shepherd International Foundation. Dr. Durante, you have outlined and mentioned some really, really wonderful work that the sisters are doing, the foundation with their lay partners that they're doing. In addition to that, what the issues, the problems that you are talking about are ones that are incredibly large, and they deal with so much of what's going on in the world and society. Are there things that you think, as a society or as governments or as policies, that we should be doing to deal with? Let's just take the first topic you talked about, child labor. Are there things we should be doing as a society, as governments, with regard to that?
Yes, I think you're touching on a very important point. And as Good Shepherd, we not only work at the grassroots, as I just mentioned, which is most of the projects that we support, but the congregation also works in advocacy, both with governments in the countries as well as at the UN. So, Good Shepherd Sisters are recognized at the UN Economic and Social Council, and they have a representation here in New York, where we advocate, lobby governments to pass legislation. For example, on child labor, we are regularly reporting to the countries that have signed the Convention on the Right of the Child. And I have to say that this is a very, very delicate area for attention. It would be interesting for everybody to become a little bit more aware of what are At present, the rights of children around us, based on the legislation of our countries, we would be surprised at times to realize that not all the standard rights recognized by the UN are actually implemented in the different countries. The US, for example, has not ratified the Convention on the Right of the Child in all its parts. Or we work a lot with Latin America, for example, in Bolivia, where actually there was a law ratifying, accepting child labor from a very early age, 12, 13. So I think, I believe all of us realize that sometimes there's a very thin line in deciding what is acceptable when it comes to protecting our children. So starting from this education and self-awareness around what is acceptable when we think of children being involved in exploitative labor. Of course, we all want our children to be to become responsible and to be, you know, children that will take their commitments. At the same time, they have the right to go to school, to receive, you know, to be in safe conditions, and to see their basic rights recognized. So I would say let's start with educating ourselves on what protecting children means, and then look at what our governments are doing or not doing with respects to basic rights of children, and join campaigns. We, as Good Shepherd, launch campaigns usually in October, especially to focus and raise awareness on the rights of child girls, who among the group we've been talking about of children overall are usually the most vulnerable one, the ones who are most affected by exploitation, especially in, unfortunately, the sexual exploitation systems. So being aware, being alert, and join initiatives and campaigns that address these issues with our local governments, our national governments, to raise the level of protection and attention towards children's rights.
Dr. Cristina Durante, thank you so much for your time. Before I let you go, and thank you for the work that you do, one last time, would you let our listeners know, if they want to contribute to your campaign, how they can do so?
Yes, please go on www.gsif.it. And thank you very much for the time and for this beautiful conversation.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you do, that the sisters do, and the good that is done with the funds that are raised by the Good Shepherd International Foundation. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Carante.
Thank you very much, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Okay. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. You know, the conversation we just had with Dr. Durante deals with huge numbers. She mentioned 130 million children engaged in labor throughout the world. And, you know, sometimes we say, well, what can I do? And that's why we say every week, multiple times, love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. And if we all as individuals did that, then our world would be more just and more compassionate. Oh, it wouldn't eliminate all of the problems, but it would be very, very significant in making our world a better place. Having said that, Tom, I think it's time for us to take a break. So join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Now let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Well, this is my favorite time of the year, Thanksgiving. And we also, right after Thanksgiving, we get ready to begin the new church year, Advent, which prepares for Christmas. You know, Tom, one of those things which I think is kind of a nice little strange, not a strange, but a kind of combination of alignment between the movement of Thanksgiving, Advent, the New Year, the Feast of Christ the King, all of those things coming together, but with the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Oh, yes.
Because while it celebrates the Thanksgiving and all of the wonderful things of Thanksgiving, always, what's the last float in the parade?
Oh, Monsignor, I know what that last float is. It's Santa Claus. And you want to know how I know it's Santa Claus?
Sure.
Because as a kid,
Right.
my father, now mind you, my father worked very hard growing up. He worked really hard and he took care of his family well. So one of the things he loves to do is sleep. So we would get up in the morning to try to go see the parade and to see Santa Claus. And I remember Monsignor chasing Santa Claus down Broadway because we would get there just as the parade was ending. So I remember us running along Broadway by the park to just kind of get a glimpse of Santa Claus. So I'm well aware of Santa Claus at the end of the parade, Monsignor. We used to see Santa Claus a lot, and just Santa Claus.
It seems to me what you're telling me that you also had a great view of a certain part of Santa
Correct.
Claus anatomy.
Yes, exactly. We would see. I could tell you the back of the float in great detail, Monsignor. We used to see the back of the float mostly.
So, can I tell you a little bit, a little
Sure.
secret? I've never gone to
Oh.
the parade.
Oh, wow.
I'd like to, but the one thing, no, I but I do watch it a little bit on television. So, but it's a great parade. And Tom, remember, I think it was a number of years ago, we had somebody from Macy's who was
Correct.
involved in the choreography and the production of
Yep.
that. What he told us is that what we all saw a couple of days ago, well, they are already beginning to work
Yes.
on next year's parade. So
Exactly,
it's such
exactly.
a spectacular that it takes, a lot of time to get ready for it. So anyway, but Tom, why don't we go to our next guest?
Sure.
And our next guest is going to talk to us as we make this transition a little bit about Advent. Liz Kelly is a retreat leader. She contributes to a number of different magazines. She works for the Word on Fire Institute. And so, Liz Kelly, thank you for joining us on Just Love. Liz, I think you have to take yourself off mute if you would like people to hear you.
There we go. Sorry about
Okay.
that.
Okay, no problem.
Delighted to be here.
Thank you. So give our listeners a little bit of your background so they get a little bit of a sense of the person behind the voice.
Sure. I have been really attracted to the life of prayer, even when I was a little kid and like retreats. And in high school, even I was on the retreat team. So this has always been something that's been sort of brewing in the back of my mind. And I always took my faith very seriously. And then sort of as I was working through my career, I was starting to get published. I discovered that I had a capacity to write about my faith in such a way that it was really a charism, I suppose. And so I started writing more and more about my faith and about the life of prayer. And this led me to leading retreats and then getting certified as a spiritual director. And in the background of all of this, I was a professor in Catholic studies for quite a number of years. Only very recently did I leave teaching and running our academic journal Logos at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota so that I could pursue leading retreats and writing full time. And now, of course, I work with the Word on Fire Institute, leading their women's formation community. So I've been blessed.
And so, what is the Word on Fire Institute?
It is the satellite sort of project for Bishop Barron's Word on Fire. The Institute focuses on offering resources to help form, especially the laity. And they do a very wide variety of projects. For example, they're doing a series right now on the persecuted church in Nigeria and the Sudan and other places. My work, I work with just strengthening women in their formation, strengthening them in their skill set just to pray with scripture such that then they can go out and be a light in the world, to be evangelists in the world. And that's really the backbone of everything that Word on Fire does and the Word on Fire Institute does, is it's strengthening people to be evangelists in the world that needs evangelization so much.
So maybe for some of our listeners, they may not be may not be completely familiar with some of the vocabulary. What is an evangelist?
I would say it this way. An evangelist walks through the world in such a way that it is apparent that they have had an authentic encounter with Christ. That authentic encounter has changed them so that they become a light in the darkness.
That sounds to me like a born-again Christian.
That is not far off. I don't think. I think in the cat life of a Catholic, we're born again and again and again. We are spoiled with being able to encounter that kind of life-changing embrace of the life of Christ every time we go to Mass, every time we take up one of the sacraments, every time we go to confession. We are, in a way, born again and again.
Okay. So are there particular kind of projects that you're working on at the moment?
I have a new book coming out this spring, and this really focuses on hope. I'm really excited about it because it really flowed very easily, and not all books do that. Some books are like giving birth to an elephant. Some are really hard, and this one just seemed to have a lot of grace around it. So I'm excited about this book coming out this spring. I'm also writing a new retreat largely for women. I'll give it for the first time this April, based on the I am statements of J that Jesus proclaims in the Gospel of John. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the good shepherd. I am the light of the world, and so on and so forth. So those are two things that are kind of occupying a lot of my prayer time right now.
We're speaking with Liz Kelly, who is a retreat leader. She's currently at the Word on Fire Institute. Liz, I'm going to kind of take our conversation down a particular road because of my own interest in this, or maybe my little bit of my challenge with regard to this. I have to tell you, and let me phrase it this way, I've never understood what hope is about. So since you're writing a book about it, tell me what hope is, and how is hope just different than being Pollyannaish and thinking everything's going to be okay?
Yeah, that's a really good distinction to make, because that word hope has been kind of hijacked, and maimed and distorted. And hope is not optimism. I think optimism tends
Is it
to really,
pessimism?
pardon me?
Is it pessimism?
Not at all.
Okay.
I think hope indicates it's, well, first of all, hope is an infused gift from God. If we struggle with hope, that's good news, because we're given infusions of hope, especially through the sacraments. It's a gift from God that helps to order us interiorly such that we desire the right things. We are, or it orders our life toward an eternal reality versus the passing chaos of the world. And I think, and I love talking about hope during Advent. It's a proper time to really be discussing hope because Advent, the whole season of it, Advent is the question that should occupy our hearts in Advent is, am I living authentically? Am I living properly? Is my life ordered toward a heavenly reality?
Oh, Liz, sorry. Tom, we were wrong. We always thought that what Advent we should be focused on is what am I going to get for Christmas? And Tom, we've gotten it wrong. Liz, thank you for setting us straight.
I'm just so happy to be here to correct you, Monsignor.
Okay,
Clearly,
great.
you needed it.
Good. I need a lot of correction. I will tell you that.
Don't we all?
But again, keep going about hope because I think this is it's very important, and I'm learning a whole lot, and I'm sure our listeners are.
And I love this about the Advent season. I when in my 20s, I got rid of my television during the Advent season. You know what happens? Right now, already, even before Thanksgiving, even at Halloween, all the ads start pelting us with what Christmas should look like, what kind of gifts you need to get. It's just awful. And it was so disturbing to my spirit, 1 year in my late 20s. I was like, I got to get this TV out of my house. It's just bringing all of these messages into my house that
Hey,
are.
Liz, you could have just not turned it on.
Yeah, well, if I had had discipline, I would have. But I'm telling you, Monsignor, I didn't have the discipline to do that. I was living alone. I had it on too much of the time. I'm like, I just want to jettison this thing. And so I did, and it was surprising to me the hope, the peace that settled on my house when that thing was gone. And it allowed me, I think, to enter into prayer more authentically. And when you do that, when you're able to enter into prayer more authentically and put away all of the distractions, all of the comparisons that are sort of fostered by a culture built on distraction and money and all of that. You really begin to learn the voice of the Lord in an authentic way. And he teaches you, he speaks to you then about hope in me, hope in me, hope in who I am, hope in who I have created you to be, my daughter. You're not created for all this distraction and greed and avarice over here. In fact, you're created for something much higher and much more satisfying.
So Liz, let me ask you this, and Tom beat you. I tell you, Tom doesn't have a television,
Ah,
so
correct.
he didn't have to get rid of
Can't
it.
have my own heart.
I do, and I watch a lot of junk TV. I love junk TV. That's my kind of claim to unfame. But anyway, so probably most people are not going to get rid of their television during Advent, and they're probably not going to even keep it off. But do you have any other maybe two or three tips for our listeners as how do they kind of embrace the spirit of hope of the Advent season? Do you got any tips for those of us who are struggling with this?
Sure. For those of you who are readers, I think one of the best companions for Advent I've found is written by Father Delp, Advent of the Heart, Advent of the Heart. For those of you who don't know it, it's kind of like an Advent retreat where you can pray through weekly some of his writings. He was, of course, arrested by the Nazis and put to death during World War II. And it includes some of his prison writings, but also some of his writings, which were very prescient on Advent when he was still a priest and not in prison. So there are a lot of different kinds of material that you can pick up if you are a reader. If you don't have a regular habit of prayer, Advent is a really good time to do that. Even if you're just picking up and resting with the readings for every day, even for 15 minutes, just try to read the daily readings or the Daily Office. There are so many resources, Magnificat and Word on Fire and Word Among Us. Everybody has something that you can do for Advent. If you are a listener, if you're an auditory person, there are many, many different programs like yours where you can tune in a little bit. I think the idea is to start small and to reserve maybe 15 minutes if it's not your habit. If it is your habit, maybe a full hour of prayer every day or of intentionally turning your attention to the Lord, turning your attention to how he is speaking to you in your life in a particular way through his word. I think it's really important to have a regular encounter with Christ's word.
Do you have any tips for our listeners on, I guess I'm going to use it this way. Let me say it from a kind of a business point of view, from a time management point of view, in terms of prayer. Okay. What's the proportion you kind of recommend to listeners on how much they talk to God and how much they listen to God?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first started learning how to pray, I did all the talking. Now that
Okay.
I'm older and wiser, I do very little talking. I try to go into adoration with no agenda at all and just sit and rest with God. So I think it kind of depends on where you are in your life of prayer. It depends on what's going on in your life. I have a chronic illness. I have MS, and so I have to sleep more than most people have to sleep. I don't always do my praying first thing when I wake up in the morning because my body isn't quite available to it yet. So it sort of depends on your time of life. But I will recommend this: if you're not in the habit of sitting in quiet, it can be very useful to journal or to give yourself, say, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it is, to make your requests known to the Lord. Philippians tells us this very clearly: make your requests known. But it also adds, with thanksgiving in your heart. So whatever time you spend talking to God, end with thanksgiving, end with I am grateful for, and then make a list, whatever it is, great or small. And then spend some time sitting and resting and allowing the Lord to speak to your heart. Start small if it's not a regular habit for you to sit in silence.
Like it. Thank you so much. I learned a whole lot and a couple of things there. I'm going to try this Advent and I hope our listeners will too. Liz Kelly, thank you so much for, first of all, the work that you're doing as a writer, retreat leader, the work you're doing in struggling sometimes and not so struggling to produce books that help the rest of us, and a very blessed and a very hope-filled Advent to you. Thanks for being with us on Just Love.
The same to you. Thank you for
Great.
having me.
Liz Kelly, writer, retreat leader. She is with the Word on Fire Institute. Tom, I think it's time for us to take a break, but before we do that, we'll just say, make sure, let's love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Tom, do you have any favorite things about Advent?
One of the things I really appreciate, two things I can think right off the top of my head. Number one, I love Advent wreaths. I think advent wreaths are really beautiful. I remember as a kid we had one and we used to light it religiously before dinner. So I'm a big fan of the advent wreath. And the other thing, I love, love, love O Come Emmanuel.
Okay.
That is one of my favorite hymns. So I can listen to that, you know, I love for 4 weeks, I got one of my favorite hymns. So I'm very happy about that.
Well, and I will say this, and if our music director, our savior, is listening, he'll probably be mad at me. Music people, they sometimes get bored with these traditional things. So you get all of these other stuff which you're not familiar with. And maybe you got to push them, like maybe once or twice you hear it in Advent. And I agree with you. It's a beautiful hymn. And Tom, you know what we'll do? Maybe next week we'll go through O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, because there's a particularly interesting, I guess, I don't know if it's a word game or whatever it is, with the verses of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel in Latin. So
Oh, wow.
we'll go through it. I think I actually probably did it a number of years ago, but I'll have to refresh my memory so I can do it in a way that is makes some sense. But it's a very, very interesting kind of reason the way that song is developed. So
Oh, okay.
anyway, but no, I like Advent. It used to be my favorite season of the year, but now Lent is my favorite season of the year. But I still like Advent, and I get less and less upset that kind of Christmas intrudes a little bit into Advent, because A, there's nothing you do about it. But secondly, it's got to, because Advent is preparing for Christmas. So you're supposed to think about Christmas because you're preparing for the coming of Jesus, and Christmas is Jesus' birthday. Well, anyway, enough of that. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Hope everybody's enjoying Thanksgiving leftovers, and have a blessed weekend. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.